podcast is written on the back of the Declaration of Independence, in which we plumb the depths of the Nicolas Cage cinematic universe in search of the lost city of gold.
Nice. My name's Callum.
And my name is Chelsea.
And we're currently sat in the airing cupboard because the whole world is on lockdown at the moment. So what better time to launch a podcast? What are we starting with on the first episode today?
We are starting with National Treasure 2. Book of Secrets.
Book of Secrets. It's not the book.
It's not the book.
It's book. Book of Secrets.
Book of Secrets.
No the. Okay. So, can you, with, let's say, two sentences, sum up the basic plot of National Treasure 2, Book of Secrets? Because we're not going to do a full recap of this almost two-hour-long film.
Over 2 hours long.
Was it over 2 hours?
It was like 2 hours 10.
Jeebus.
It was a nightmare.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, so we're not going to get fully into the depths of this film because that would be boring. So you can either go and watch the film first before you listen to us or, you know, just read it up on IMDb if you don't want to put yourself through that because I do not blame you.
Yeah, I mean, it's on Disney Plus now and I'm sure everyone's got Disney Plus because they want to watch DuckTales. Sorry, The Mandalorian. You can watch it on there if you know.
Yeah,
you,
I mean, we've already put the algorithm on ours, haven't we?
Yes.
Because we've watched National Treasure 2.
And Mr. Boogity.
Yeah, someone insisted that was the first film we watched.
Yes. Anyway, what's the plot of National Treasure 2, Book of Secrets?
Okay, so basically, Nicolas Cage reprises his role as Benjamin Gates.
Yeah.
Bearing in mind, haven't seen the first one.
No.
I don't know if he's sticking to what that character is or what his original journey is, but anyway, that's his name. He needs to clear his ancestor's name and prove his innocence by finding the treasure. The treasure.
Yeah.
And purely coincidentally going on a mini tour of Europe.
Yeah.
He doesn't know what the treasure is.
Doesn't he?
Not at the beginning. It's generic. We need to find treasure.
Oh, yeah.
Find the treasure.
And then about halfway through the film, it's like, oh, it's the city of gold.
Yeah, yeah. It's like Indiana Jones, but if Indiana Jones wore like cheap t-shirts and screamed a lot.
And if Indiana Jones didn't have that scene at the beginning where they clearly define why we're going on this adventure. Yeah. That clear scene at the beginning where they come into the lecture hall with Indian. And go, the Nazis are doing this.
No, they do that,
so
though.
So we have to do this.
National Treasure 2 starts after the sort of weird...
It's like a prologue.
Prologue in the past of Abraham Lincoln being shot, which is why he's clearing his ancestor's name.
Yeah.
It actually starts with Nicolas Cage in a lecture hall doing that typical film teacher thing where they sum up their lecture.
Yeah, it's like
But it means nothing.
It's obviously meant to be like the last 20 seconds of a 2 hour plus TED talk. And at the end of this 2 hour plus talk, he goes, to sum up, here's one sentence that explains the plot so that the general audience can get on board. Which, if all TED talks were like that, I'd just watch the last 10 minutes.
Right.
Right. Anyway, so that happens. We discover a bad guy. Whatever.
It's almost like the writers didn't really know what they were going to write until halfway through. And then they went, oh, it's the lost city of gold. That's what it is.
Do you think they were writing the film live?
As it was being premiered. Yeah, Nicolas Cage. It's all improv.
Yeah.
They won't tell you that on IMDb trivia. But,
it's all improv.
That's true.
Yeah. So the kind of the idea with this podcast was that I would argue for these films and you would argue against these films.
Yes.
Or that we would have a kind of a friendly debate / discussion about the merits of the film and so on and so forth. Problematically, we've picked this film, which is very vanilla.
Has no merits.
It's not that it has no merits.
I'm just hands down going to win this one.
It's just that it's a hard one to fight for.
Yeah, let's just say this is a friendly conversation.
Yeah.
Let's not debate this one because we both hated it.
I didn't hate it. I just...
I mean, it didn't take long before you were looking at your phone and I was off looking at Animal Crossing memes.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, you look at Animal Crossing... You're looking at Animal Crossing memes right now.
Don't lie to the
listeners. We're in the middle of a... Stop it.
Listener.
Stop laughing at Tom Nook.
It.
Stop it.
Great, you've learned the name of one character. Yeah. Well done. Topical humour.
So, yeah, it's a bit of a tough one. But have you got anywhere you want to start?
Okay, I want to start with my first point of contention that happens very early in the film. So he has a sidekick called Riley.
It's the one from The Hangover that you don't remember.
Because he's not actually in the film.
Yeah,
Oh, I need to stop swearing. No, it's going to be explicit now.
I'll try and bleep it out with a Nicolas Cage sound or something.
Okay, I've already said Bozzlesquick as well, so you don't have to say that.
And now you've said it again.
Yeah.
Bozzlesquick.
You're an idiot. Yeah, it's Riley. I mean, I'm surprised you know the character's name.
It's only because I wrote it down while the film was on.
He's the one from The Hangover that disappears. Justin Bartha? I'm going to take a hint at that. I'm going to add in a sound effect here. If I was right.
Okay.
Yeah,
so my first point of contention is that he, Riley, is a writer. But he also owns a bright red Ferrari. Now, I know a lot of writers. I am a writer myself. None of them own Ferraris. Please. No one is reading his book. No one is buying his book, and yet he owns a Ferrari.
I believe that this is to do with the last film. In the last film, they also found treasure. And he's used his treasure money to buy a Ferrari.
Sure, but he's a writer. Why would his money not go on proving financial stability and making sure he's okay in the future, because like most writers would do?
Because he's the comic relief. In inverted commas.
Okay, I was going to say, he's not very funny.
No, he's not. It's a bit of a... I feel like when the film was written and made, maybe that performance was funny, but it's that kind of thing that's just sort of dated really quickly. And I don't know if that's an excuse.
I mean, I failed to see how that was ever funny. Sorry. Sorry, Justin Bartha. My bad.
Yeah, he's a bit weak in it, isn't he? To say the least.
I mean, he's not given anything to do, is he, really?
No. One thing
bumble about and pretend he knows nothing.
There's a sequence where they're in Buckingham Palace. We'll get to it properly later, I'm sure. But he's kind of the tech guy. He's the guy at the laptop talking Nicolas Cage through all the scenarios or whatever. And in the Buckingham Palace sequence, he just kind of says generic British Dick Van Dyke-y kind of things, as if they're like clever one-liners.
Do you remember any of... Oh, God Save the Queen!
He just says God Save the Queen at one point when he like unlocks a door for Nicolas Cage. And I think he goes, "Well, time for some tea, chaps." Or it's just... It's like... That sequence was kind of reminiscent of like Paul Feig's Ghostbusters, where I could just see whoever the heck directed this standing behind the camera and just kind of going, say this, do that, not having any relation to anything that's going on, and just being like, we'll sort it in post, and then this is the best they could come up with. So we've talked about Justin Bartha's performance, but obviously this is a Nicolas Cage podcast.
Of course.
So have we got any opening feelings about the Cage performance here? Because I certainly have.
I mean, it's very understated in terms of what I've come to expect from Nicolas Cage.
It's a very straight man Cage performance. It's very dialed back to the point where the note I wrote in my book was, this guy could actually exist. Which is something that you don't often get from a Nicolas Cage performance, is a sense of, oh, this is a person and not an animal or... a spirit god or whatever weird Nicolas Cage inspiration he's got this time round. But this time round, it seems like he's sat in a park and studied and observed real human beings to work out what they do on a day-to-day basis.
Would you replace Tom Hanks in The Da Vinci Code with Nicolas Cage in this film?
I haven't seen The Da Vinci Code. Oh, that's what I would do then. Is replace Tom Hanks in The Da Vinci Code with Nicolas Cage, because then I would watch it. Oh, no, I love... I actually feel like I reckon if you swap the two characters around, from what I know of a Tom Hanks performance and what I know of a Nicolas Cage performance, I feel like Nicolas Cage would probably work better in The Da Vinci Code and Tom Hanks would work better in National Treasure.
I thought you were just going to diss Tom Hanks then and I was getting ready to...
Because this is a more sort of family-friendly, light-hearted adventure romp. And imagine Woody, the pull-string cowboy, doing this film. It would be delightful.
There is a cold in my boot.
Jesus. Oh, no.
Joke time.
Oh, no. That was awful. It's time to cancel the podcast, guys.
No. Sorry, guys.
But yeah, his performance is relatively understated. Except, of course, for one... There's one very standout big moment.
Which brings us to a segment of the podcast that I'm now going to call Help, I'm Trapped in a Glass Nicolas Cage of Emotion.
Congratulations, you did successfully read that off your notebook. Yes. I'm trapped in a glass...
Trapped in a Nicolas Cage of emotion.
I'm trapped in a Nicolas Cage of emotion. So we're going to play a clip of our favourite Nicolas Cage moment. Like, the moment he cages. He full cages.
Good afternoon, sir.
Hello.
Been drinking, have we?
Just a nip. Just pop down to the pub for a pint. Bit of all right. Going to arrest the man for that. Going to detain a blighter for enjoying his whiskey.
It's all right, that's enough, sir.
Beggars and mash. Sir? Balls and squeak. What? Smoke your pie.
Sir?
Haggis! That's it! Dismount the banister.
I've got a lovely bunch of coconuts. Here they are, standing in a row. Small one, come big on. One, some as big as your head!
That was brilliant.
So it's a standout moment from the film.
Mm-hmm.
It's, I imagine when this film premiered, the crowd stood from their seats and clapped at the screen. And Ronald Reagan watched Back to the Future, he asked for that scene to be rewound so he could watch it again. Have you heard this story?
No. What?
So there's a joke in Back to the Future about Ronald Reagan being the president.
Yeah.
And then Doc Brown goes, "What, the actor?" Yeah. And Ronald Reagan, when he watched the film, found it so funny that he asked them to rewind the clip so he could listen to the joke about himself again.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so I imagine that happened when this scene played in the premiere. I imagine someone...
Every British person was like, yeah, play the offensive English accent again.
I love it. I love that moment. It's like, I'm pretty sure that the script writers went, we need to manufacture a moment in the script for Cage to do Cage. You know?
Yeah.
I think they manufactured a moment where they went, oh, like pre-meme. They went, oh, this could be a meme, you know? And they manufactured this weird moment where they're trapped in the public section of Buckingham Palace, like it's the blooming Natural History Museum, and you can kind of just go in of a day, which you can't.
Yeah, there's like 500 people going on a tour of the palace. There wasn't a special event, was there?
It was just a normal day. Because you can go to Buckingham Palace, I think, in the sort of summer months. There's like 2 months where you can book, and you have to pay quite a lot, and you only go in small groups of like 10 and whatnot. Like, my mum's done it once, and she stole a paper cup that they gave her a cup of tea in because it said the word Buckingham Palace on it.
You know you're going to get your mum arrested for treason.
I think it was a paper cup. I'm sure it's fine.
I mean, it's still theft.
They weren't reusing it, I hope.
Wow.
Yeah, the Buckingham Palace is full of people.
Yeah, and they managed to find the one day in London where it doesn't rain.
Yeah.
It's just beautiful, sunny.
It's a lovely looking day. But yeah, so they're in Buckingham Palace and the plan is kind of to get purposely arrested in the little jail that they have underneath Buckingham Palace. So Nicolas Cage kind of spritzes some alcohol onto his neck so that he smells like a drunkard and then goes into that tirade you just heard. And it's brilliant. It's brilliant. Like, there's no denying.
It's the only bit of the movie I laughed at.
Yeah. That it is genius.
Is it genius?
It's genius.
I I think we have a slightly different definition of genius. Like, it's fun. I've seen comic actors do better, you know?
Oh, I don't know. I think the thing that makes it so standout mm-hmm. is that you're kind of watching it and going, oh, it's a bit, like we said, a bit of a bland, you know, dry cracker Nicolas Cage performance. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly, wham, out comes, going to detain a blighter for drinking his whiskey. And you're like, yes, back of the net, Jurassic Park. We've got ourselves a Cage moment. It feels warm and reassuring, like a hug or like an old slipper. It's nice to see him back.
I'm a vampire! I'm a vampire! I'm a vampire! I'm a vampire!
So we take notes during these films so that when we come to do the podcast, we have a plethora of information to talk about. But 80% of these points that we write down are just sort of bullet points, and there's not really a lot that you can sort of grow from that point.
They're not joke worthy enough.
No,
but we want to say them anyway.
So we're just going to quick fire back and forth about some of these points. Mm-hmm. Off you go.
Okay, this film features my favorite spy movie trope.
Uh-huh.
Enhance. Where they just take a picture of anything, or they have a drone flying at something really far away, and they just go, enhance, 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 enhance. And suddenly you can read it
yeah.
on these old Motorola flip phones,
yeah.
and it's not just pixelated to
show. Balls and squeak.
Harvey Keitel plays an FBI character who has, at one point, a pair of suspenders on, and on the suspenders are little monkeys printed. It's a very odd character choice, but it made me very happy.
Riley hacks Buckingham Palace with a bunch of blackberries just taped to the inside of a toilet stall.
Yeah, he does.
It's very good.
There's a sequence where they're in Paris on the street and a bunch of cops stop them, and they use the cops to help them translate some French. And this one French cop is able to easily translate the French word for resolute, which is a very... it's a very odd word. It's a word I don't think I've ever used. But this French cop knew both the word in French and in English, which is very surprising.
This film features Helen Mirren in the lowest point of her career.
You haven't
lower
seen...
Lower even than being Statham's mum in Fast and Furious.
Oh,
I've seen that.
Good.
That's bad.
A positive note. Mm-hmm. The car chase in London is very nice and well done.
It's actually very good,
It's all pretty much in camera. And there's minimal CGI. I like that. Congratulations.
There's clip art on the White House website, which at the time was the worst thing that could be on the website before Trump's face was all over it.
Talking about Trump, the president in this film has a secret book, the Book of So-Called Secrets. And the president has to pick a hiding place for it. This president puts it in the Library of Congress, I believe.
Yeah.
Where would Trump keep his hidden book?
McDonald's.
Mar-a-Lago. There's another point where they have to break into the Queen's desk in Buckingham Palace. On that desk is a framed photo of a corgi.
I didn't see that.
That made me very happy. It's one singular corgi looking at the camera in a framed sort of oval gold, sort of a sweetheart's photo frame.
Wow.
Yeah.
So to end this segment, I just want to say very, very seriously, this is where we get serious in the podcast.
Okay.
Just want to say rest in peace to the man who jumped into the Thames and probably then died of cholera.
The man who jumped in. Oh.
The bad guy jumped into the Thames and he's just fine.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
he would die of a disease.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Probably instantly.
Just jumps off like Westminster Bridge or something, doesn't
it? It's dirty water, man.
It's very dirty water.
Because I was made for this sewer, baby, and I am the king!
If you enjoy the film so much, you decide to sit through the end credits, you'll discover that the film is written by.
The Wibblies.
The Wibblies is what they're credited as.
No individual names. The Wibblies.
Phenomenal that the pop children's Australia group decided to turn about heels and write National Treasure 2 for Jerry Bruckheimer. I mean,
it's a brave move.
I mean, that's a brave move regardless, because imagine having to be taken, I mean, semi-seriously. You're writing a sort of a fun adventure flick.
Fun, in quotation marks.
But you're still in Hollywood going into board meetings. with the name The Wibblies. I mean, I don't want to seem harsh or you know, like I'm bullying them.
But he's gonna anyway.
But what the
Puzzle squeak,
guys? No, but yeah, it's a really odd move to not only, I mean, fair enough, keep your name if you are the Wibblies, if mm-hmm. you're John and Sandra Wibbly or whatever they're called, but to then decide that you're just going to be called the Wibblies, like
it's a strong brand choice, isn't
right?
it?
Right. I wonder whether they got inspired by the sibling duo.
Like the Coen brothers.
The Coen brothers.
But they're still credited in their films separately.
Yeah, or the Wachowskis.
Oh, yeah,
who did The Matrix and mm-hmm. Speed Racer.
Are they credited as the Wachowskis?
I believe they're normally just credited as the Wachowskis. Oh, I don't okay. know, though. Also,
do they think they're on that level, the Wibblies?
I don't know.
That was really catty, sorry.
That's all right. I want to know, has Nicolas Cage ever done a film with the Wachowskis? Because he would be a bold choice for them to work with. A great choice.
Can we do a remake of The Matrix where Nicolas Cage is Neo?
I'm sure someone's already
deepfaked it out there. I would actually maybe watch
that. Yeah, I think he'd do, like a young Nicolas Cage, you know, would do a good Neo from The Matrix.
No, I'm talking Nicolas Cage now.
Oh, okay.
Like, completely off the wall. Who knows what he's doing?
I want him in a remake of Jupiter Ascending, playing Sean Bean's character, who is half man, half bumblebee.
Does anyone want to see a remake of Jupiter Ascending?
I quite liked Jupiter Ascending, but okay. I also like the films of Nicolas Cage, so...
There we go. That's why this will never work. So before we wrap up, I had a look at the Amazon reviews for this film.
Mm-hmm.
Only 2% were one-star reviews. I was honestly very, very surprised. Yeah. People love this movie.
Yeah, it's a good general audience film.
So I've got a five-star review here from Amazon.
Yeah. Just
to read, to fill time.
Cool.
A. Seymour says, excellent sequel. This is a very good movie and typical Hollywood, having had a success with the first, following the same format for the sequel. I don't know if that's true, I haven't seen the first one. This has all the elements which made the first one great, so no one should be disappointed. Not even the English, who are horribly and wonderfully caricatured by Cage in the scene set inside Buck House.
Exactly. What
this
did
person,
I say?
That A. Was... Seymour lives in Buck House, because who calls it Buck House?
A. Seymour was the guy who stood up and demanded they re-roll the film backwards so he could watch that scene again. He loved it. It's a great, it's a stonking scene. It's the highlight of the film.
If you say so. Jack says, love the National Treasure films. And the comment just says, wish there were more of these films, like 3, 4, 5.
Oh, you gave us examples.
Yeah,
well, to get you excited, there are talks of a third one. There have
Stop.
Been talks of a third one since the second one came out, mate.
Like over a decade ago.
Yeah, and there's talks that now with Disney Plus would be the perfect time to do a National Treasure 3.
Oh my God.
I'd watch it. Cage would do it. He needs the money. He'd do anything.
Stop. And just to back up my point, I'm going to read a one-star review.
Okay.
Because. Kay Collins. Awful. It's a shame I can't give negative stars.
She's disgusted.
This film is so bad, it brought on a very serious migraine.
Oh, wow.
Uh-huh. The plot was empty, the characters generic and without depth, the special effects non-existent. As for the huge mountain of gold hidden under Mount Rushmore, what a ridiculously pathetic plot. The clues for the whole treasure hunt were so lateral and vague, I found it incredible that the main character deciphered each one within seconds of discovering it. This is Nicolas Cage at his absolute worst. I can't believe I spent money on this drivel.
Oh, who was that
scathing.
From?
That's scathing. Kay Collins.
Kay Collins. Scathing. I disagree. I liked some of the puzzles. I thought it was nice. There's one which is like the debt that all men pay, and then the answer is death.
Oh, yes.
And I was like, oh, that's nice. A puzzle I can work out at home. Do you know what I mean? Like a puzzle along mm-hmm. with National Treasure 2. There's also these desks that have...
The Resolute desks.
Where you pull the drawers out at certain sort of lengths. And it acts like a combination code mm-hmm. on a padlock. I quite like that. I thought that was a neat little puzzle. It's so neat. They do it twice in the film with two different desks because they're desperate for puzzles. But
need to fill that 2-hour 10 time
slot. Bought on a migraine...
A migraine.
I find it's very that, serious. I find that very over the top because we're going to watch some films that will give you migraines. Ghost Rider 2, Spirit of Vengeance comes to mind immediately as a nightmare-inducing, headache-bringing-on film.
I look forward to it.
Oh, yes. Well, with that note, shall we wrap up or have you got anything you'd like to add?
No, that's it from me.
And that's it from me. Is that our outro now?
I think so.
Okay.
We're just ripping off the two Ronnies.
So we're not going to do Ghost Rider 2 next.
No.
We're going to do Nicolas Cage, John Travolta, classic Face Off.
Face Slash Off
as our next film. We look forward to seeing you all there for another episode of This Podcast is Written on the Back of the Declaration of Independence.
If you have enjoyed the podcast, you may leave us a rating, if you should so wish. If not, just give us a follow or a comment on social media. We are on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Nick Cage Pod. That's N-I-C Cage Pod. You can also, if you really, really like this and you want to chuck us a couple of quid so that we can, you know, afford our rent now that all our acting work has dried up, you can drop us a few pennies at Ko-fi.com. It's ko-fi.com/nickcagepod. Same as the socials. So thank you very much for listening. That's it from us. Bye.
Whiskey!